the North Shore's home and cabin store on Lake Superior.
6 minutes now past 11. Good morning and welcome to Midday on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Gary Ankton. Glad you could join us. It's a little like trying to make those last few dollars stretch all the way to payday. The Minnesota legislature has taken off until Thursday now in an effort to give legislative leaders more time to work out a budget agreement. Under the state constitution, the legislature can only hold floor sessions for 4 more days before it has to go home for the year. And much of the work that legislators hope to accomplish, tax cuts, education spending increases, transportation programs, and the like, most of those programs are contingent on an overall budget agreement. So where do those budget talks stand? Well, joining us from the state capitol for what is becoming their weekly radio program, Republican House Speaker Steve Swigum and DFL Senate Majority Leader Roger Moe. And we also invite you to join our conversation. Great opportunity to catch up on legislative negotiations and discussion. If you have a question for the leadership, give us a call here, 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. If you're calling from outside the Twin Cities, you can reach us toll-free, and that number is 1-800-242-2828, 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. Senator Moe, thanks for coming in this morning.
Thank you, Gary. It's nice to be with you again this week for the weekly show, I guess.
Speaker Swigum with us?
No, he's not here right now, but I do know that he's coming because we just had a conversation a short time ago, and he mentioned that we had to be on this program together, so I know that he's coming.
Probably getting his makeup on for the radio program.
That's it. He probably.
So what is the latest? Can you announce on the air now that you've reached an agreement?
No, I'm sorry, Gary, can't do that. I'd like to. I'm sure the speaker would like to be able to do that as well, but unfortunately we're not there yet. I think we had
Well, we're having a technical problem. Now we're set.
Are we okay?
Yes.
We met this morning, and I think it's fair to say that both sides are showing some flexibility. Again, the Senate's plan is primarily a plan whereby we think that we can have permanent tax cuts, both on the income and on the property tax side. But we also feel strongly that we need to invest in education, particularly considering the fact that about 80% of our school districts are having declining enrollment problems, and that obviously affects the formula. They're using general fund to subsidize special education. There's technology needs. I can go on and on. And then at the same time, we think we can have a bonding bill and a transportation package that reflect the statewide needs. So we think we can do all of it, and we're right now kind of arguing on degrees of tax cuts versus education spending. The one-time money, which by the way makes all of this a little more complicated this year, because we're talking about one-time resources, then the permanent resources, and then a bonding bill, and that I think complicates this discussion a little bit. But in terms of the one-time resources, I think that we're fairly close. We're going to put some of that into a transportation package, but I think we can get all of that worked out. It's really the permanent ongoing money and the debate between how much should go for permanent tax cuts and then what kind of tax cuts and how much should go into education spending.
Mm-hmm. Well, give us an idea, Senator. How does the process actually work? Do you and Speaker Swigum, do you meet all day, every day now, or do you meet for an hour or just call each other? How's that work?
Well, basically, we're in kind of constant communication with one another, but we will meet. We met this morning for a half hour or so, and we're hopefully going to meet again this afternoon. So what we do is we meet, make some suggestions, we get a sense of where one another's at on a certain part of the overall budget, and I guess I've compared it to a Rubik's Cube, and we keep turning the sides around, and hopefully we come up with, eventually we'll come up with all the colors on the one side. And by the way, the speaker's here now, so.
Well, good morning, Mr. Speaker.
Good morning, Gary. Sorry for being late.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for joining us for what's become our weekly radio program with the two of you. just like the governor's show.
Right.
I told the speaker what we could do is probably just run a tape from one of the previous meetings and probably be about the same thing. So.
Well, now, on that point, now, the last time we spoke, the big hang-up was whether or not everybody would agree or could agree to how much money was actually available for permanent tax cuts or spending programs and the like. My understanding, Mr. Speaker, is that that's been resolved now. Is that correct? Everybody on the same page there?
That is correct, Gary. While the House felt very justified in using a larger number based upon past history or past definitions of structural balance, we understood that in this negotiations took place until we accepted the number that the Senate and the governor were working off, it just wasn't going to happen. So we are now in that box, and so I think that was the first barrier that, you know, the House consented to and there was some cooperation on, and now we have to work within the box to try to get the numbers to work. And Gary, I'm very hopeful it's gonna happen. You know, we've got some wonderful opportunities, some things to do, some good things for roads and bridges, for education, for taxpayers of the state. And I guess from this morning there was honestly some movement on both sides. I spoke to a group earlier this morning, Gary, and the group was wondering, Roger Moe and I both happen to be former teachers, Norwegians, we're both 100% Norwegian. They're wondering why two farm boy teacher Norwegians can't get this figured out.
Well, why not?
Good, probably good question. Too stubborn.
There comes the stubbornness of being Norwegian, too. Huh? Is that it, Roger?
Now, what do other legislators do while you folks are meeting? Have they all gone home? Are there conference committees meeting to get everything worked out so you can just plug in the numbers when you folks are done? Or what are the other legislators up to?
Yes, the speaker and I agreed yesterday, I believe it was, to let the conferees get back to the table, because in all of the bills there are other items that are not necessarily contingent upon a target dollar amount that they do have to negotiate and agree on. So hopefully all of the conferees will be back at the table working on some of the language, because when we do finally reach that time where we decide on what we're going to have on the tax cut side, how much on the spending side, the size of this and that, then we don't want those other items to take to occupy the time. We want that resolved. So the conferees will be working. That does not include everybody. I would guess that some members have probably gone home for a couple of days now. I think everybody expected us to be over now, so I'm sure there are other plans that people have.
Mm-hmm. Has the governor or his representatives been sitting in on your meetings so that everybody ends up on the same page?
Probably not sitting in on negotiations, Gary. The give and take between the Senate and the House, we certainly have kept them aware of or apprised of the various offers. I mean, I think they're pretty well aware of what's on the table as we negotiate back and forth. So involved, if not directly, certainly involved from the outside. In particular, in regards to the last question of the willingness of the House and Senate to agree to let the conference committees work, there are two conference committees that we seem to be fairly close in the numbers with. That be the Transportation Conference Committee and the bonding, the Capital Investment Conference Committee. And, you know, I think they can actually get into giving some more than language, some dollar amounts back and forth. While, you know, we're negotiating in a kind of a global comprehensive package, you know, our numbers that we deal with those two issues tend to be fairly similar most of the time.
Mm-hmm. Back to the governor for just a moment. Is he as involved in this process as you would hope him to be at this point in the negotiations?
No, he's not really been all that involved. Spokespersons from the administration, they certainly have been communicating with both the speaker and myself in terms of provisions in the supplemental budget bill, for instance, that they would like to see, or provisions they'd like to see changed, certain guidelines on budget figures we can use, things like that. They're certainly involved at that level, but I guess the other day, I think it was yesterday, we had a caucus over at the governor's residence, and basically the governor indicated that he would, when members asked him about certain provisions, he basically said that he would wait and see what the bills look like when they got to his desk, and then he'd make a decision.
Mm-hmm. There was some talk much earlier in the session about reserving a couple of days after all the work is done to see what he does with these bills and perhaps get together again to try to override any vetoes. Is that still an option, or have you so few legislative days, as they're called, left that that's no longer on the table?
Well, that's certainly still an option, and that's why we're trying to conserve days now as much as possible. Hopefully that is not necessary, Gary. Hopefully there is a mutual agreement between House, Senate, and Governor that would be an honorable agreement, one that we can trust each to hold their word, their honor to, and that we wouldn't have to reserve that day to come back and check our work, I guess you would say.
Mm-hmm. If you're just joining us, we've been joined from our bureau at the state capitol by Minnesota legislative leaders Steve Swigum, he's Speaker of the House, and Roger Moe, who is Senate Majority Leader. And they are trying to work out an overall budget agreement. Legislature as such has taken a few days off while these negotiations continue. They've been good enough to join us this hour to bring us up to date on just where the negotiations stand and catch up on some of these other issues as well that legislators have been debating for the last several weeks. If you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call, 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. Outside the Twin Cities, you can reach us toll-free at 1-800-242-2828, 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. Senator Moe, you had a proposal, I believe it was last week, that essentially each leg of the tripartisan government, House, Senate, and the governor, take a third of the money available and do with it as they will. Was that a serious proposal on your part?
Yes, it was very serious. Again, in an attempt to try to break this deadlock we seem to find ourselves in, it was a way of certainly, and let me just say that this deals with the permanent resources. So the 549 that we have agreed to work off of, to take that amount and divide it by three and say, all right, what's each person, what's the House going to do with their third, the Senate going to do with their third, and the administration can make a decision on its third. And I think, to be perfectly honest, we probably would end up with something probably pretty close to where we're going to end up anyway, with a certain percentage of that going for permanent tax cuts and then some of it going for investments.
Mm-hmm. Speaker Swigum, I understand at least your initial reaction was that it was the idea was essentially a non-starter unless everybody agreed that all the money should go for permanent tax cuts. Is that right?
Well, certainly I think probably the difference that exists is that, with this overage of taxation, with this surplus that exists, and you can use many different terms for it, I think the premise difference, Gary, is that it is not the governor's money, it's not the House's money, it's not the Senate's money for them to decide how to spend or cut or make the reductions, the resource reductions. It's the people's money. It ought to be back in their pockets. This is an overage of taxation on top of the highest tax rates in the country. So, to kind of fall into the box that say, well, this is the Senate's money, this is the House's money, this is the governor's money, completely is kind of foreign to our premise that it's the people's money. It's not the politicians' money for them to decide how to divide up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but in the final analysis, the legislature has to make a decision, and the premise on which this offer was put was that then we understand it is not our money. We know that it is taxpayer dollars, and we understand that the taxpayers want some tax relief, and we acknowledge that and believe that is should be a part of this overall agreement. But we also believe that the taxpayers know that their schools are their schools, and their environment belongs to the taxpayers. And those are some strategic investments that I think are legitimate as well. So we understand it is not our money, but in the final analysis, the legislature has to make a decision on this one way or the other.
Speaker Swegum, one more question for you before we get to our callers here. Under that scenario, the one-third, 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 the governor has indicated he would put all his money toward reducing license tab fees, which would be a form of tax cuts, a permanent tax cuts. I presume the House would use its money for permanent tax cuts. Even if the Senate were to spend all of its money on new programs, still that would be two-thirds of the money going to tax cuts. Would that be sufficient to meet your needs?
Probably not, Gary. You know, the fact of the matter is, let me go back to the fact, it's not our money to decide what to do with. We're one of the highest tax states in the nation. This is the overage of money. It ought to be back in the hands of the people, and I just don't think the politicians ought to be sitting in judgment of those dollars. You know, we're willing to invest in the needs of roads and bridges. I think we've shown that with the bills that have passed the House, and we've certainly been willing to invest in education, one-time monies and now permanent monies with the last offer. But you know, there comes a point when, you know, maybe what a good counteroffer would be to say the House and Senate take the proposals that we have brought forward. Since the governor hasn't been really involved in those proposals negotiations, just take the proposals that have been brought forward and let the governor sit in judgment by being, quote, that arbitrator. We'll bring the final package of the House, the final package of the Senate to him, and then let him make a decision on the package brought forward from either House or Senate. You know, that has some liking to me. I like that idea much more than saying, you know, let's each take a third of the people's money.
How about that, Senator Mo?
Well, again, we're looking at any and all options. We certainly are open to any number of suggestions, but again, I want to get back to the point that we recognize that it is not our money, but it is the legislature's responsibility to make a determination whether we put it all into tax cuts or whether or not we invest it all or whether or not you just leave it alone. The legislature has to make a decision, and so we'll continue to look at different options and make different offers until we hopefully get to a point where we can all say that there's something, there's enough here to declare a victory and a reasonable compromise so we can get this over with and go home.
Senate Majority Leader Roger Moe is with us. House Speaker Steve Swegum has joined us from the state capitol as well. And if you have a question for the legislative leadership, give us a call here, 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. Sally, your question, please.
Good morning. Thank you very much for taking my call. My question is directed to the Speaker. Speaker Swegum, I just wondered, with all the pressing issues you've just discussed, why are you wasting time in bringing back the unicameral legislature issue, and who would gain from this?
Let me answer the last question first in your two questions, Sally. The people who would gain, I think, would be the citizens of the state of Minnesota because they would be allowed to make a decision. The last poll that I saw, Sally, and I think fairly consistent with the various polls done throughout the last year, say that somewhere around 85% of the people would like the opportunity to vote on this issue, opportunity on the ballot to have their voice stated. Now, in all honesty, the last poll I saw said that it would probably be defeated. Yet 85% do say that they would like to vote on. So from the standpoint of who would gain, it seems to me that the citizens would gain by having a voice, by having be empowered in making some decisions onto the process of their government. The second question as to why to bring it back, Sally, would be, you know, I believe out of a courtesy to the governor, that this issue should be debated and voted upon on the House floor and on the Senate floor, that there ought to be straight up and down votes by members of both the House and Senate on the respective floors for the citizens of the state to know where they sit on the issue. I don't think that is anything wrong to ask people who are elected to office to stand and vote yes or no on an issue as important as an issue as this marquee issue is to the governor of the state.
How would the process be different? We have this current stalemate over how to divide up the budget now. How would it be any different under the unicameral? Let's just say we had a unicameral legislature. Would this process be significantly different than it is now?
Well, not having been there and trying to hypothesize what it might be like, Gary, you probably would not have the negotiations going on between House and Senate as we currently are right now. But my guess is that within the minority and the majority within the one respective body, there might be a similar amount of negotiations going on, maybe between the governor and the minority or the governor and the majority to make sure that the package that was passed, was veto-proof or, was not going to be vetoed. I'm sure that there would be some internal negotiations going on, but not to the extent that is going on now with the three legs, the House, Senate, and Governor's Office.
Senator Moe, how do you think that process would work under a unicameral legislature?
Don't know, but my guess would be that, as the Speaker indicated, there would be the give and take between the respective parties in the one House legislature. Either that, or there would be an attempt to try to get two-thirds of the legislature to agree to the package, and regardless of party, and probably then dismiss the governor as insignificant in this process, and basically run the state, which is not altogether different than what I guess they do in Nebraska now. The governor is not a strong governor in that system, because the one House legislature, they've figured out ways to try to get two-thirds of the group to go along and they get things done. So it's hard to say. There may be a different set of circumstances in Minnesota, but I think it personally, I don't particularly think that's a good idea anyway, so I don't think it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Melissa, your question, please.
Yeah, hi. My question is for State Representative Swigum. I'm very well aware that it's my money, but the reason why we elected representatives is to make decisions for us. And it seems to me that the Republican House members don't want to do the job that they were elected to do. And I guess my question is, if they just simply want to give everything back, why did they decide to run for office, and why did they agree to take the responsibility of prioritizing for the voters if they now don't want to do that job?
Well, Melissa, I'm not sure that that's a fair question. What we're talking about is the overage of taxation, Melissa. We have a budget this year for the biennium, probably about $25 billion. It's pretty close to about $25 billion. And we in the House, as well as in the Senate, have set priorities, have brought forward those agenda items, brought forward a very good package that was agreed to by the three parties, Governor, House, and Senate, last year, and are doing so again this year in the budgets for this year. Remember, we're in the budget for this cycle of 0-0 and 0-1, and that's what we ought to be making determination upon. The question, and by the way, in regards to that, Melissa, we have looked at needed deficiencies that need to be addressed in education and transportation and senior prescription drugs. That is all covered in the House budget to various degrees, like in the Senate. Those are deficiencies. By the way, and also in regards to that, Governor Ventura has basically said no new spending. So that's kind of a different perspective that we have to factor in as well. I think the decision, Melissa, is about the overage of money, the surplus. I'm not sure what word I should use to kind of explain it to you. I'm not doing a good job of explaining it in regards to the out biennium. How much money is going to be there over and above what taxpayers should be expected to pay with the highest rates in the country? And, Melissa, right or wrong, our premise is that the state has no right to that money. Our premise is that that should not be the politicians' money. Our premise is that that should be back in the hands of the taxpayers to permanently reduce those tax burdens so that we don't get into the position of surplus after surplus after surplus, and then deciding how to spend that additional surplus or how to redistribute it back to the taxpayers.
That was Republican House Speaker Steve Swigum. He's been joined at the Capitol by Senate Majority Leader Roger Moll, the DFL leader in the Senate. And they have joined us today to bring us up to date on negotiations aimed at trying to bring to an end the legislative session. The legislature as such has taken a couple of days off while negotiations between Speaker Swigum and Senator Moll continue on an overall budget agreement. They've been good enough to take a little time away from those talks to join us and bring us up to date here. If you've got a question for them, give us a call. 651-227-6000. 651-227-6000. Outside the Twin Cities, you can reach us toll-free at 1-800-242-2828. 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. We'll get to some more callers in just a couple of minutes.
Programming on NPR is supported by Ecolab, dedicated to improving cleaning and sanitation standards for leading hospitality, healthcare, and food processing customers worldwide. On the web at ecolab.com.
The Justice Department is recommending that Microsoft be split into two separate companies to eliminate any unfair advantage Microsoft wields through its ever-present Windows operating system. Microsoft has until May 10th to respond to the proposal. I'm Juan Williams. Is the breakup of Microsoft inevitable? And how would dismantling Microsoft affect the high-tech world? That's the next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation begins at 1 o'clock this afternoon. Over the noon hour today, second hour of our midday program, we're heading off to the National Press Club. Going to hear from the governor of Iowa, Tom Vilsack, is speaking at the press club today, talking about GMOs, genetically modified organisms. Very, very hot subject all around the country. In fact, all around the world. Right now, news headlines. Here's Marianne Sullivan. Marianne?
Thank you, Gary. In the news this hour, mixed news on the economy. A closely watched gauge of future U.S. economic activity was up slightly in March, indicating a continued strong economy this year. But the index of leading indicators also suggested slower growth than the breakneck speed of the last 6 months. Time Warner has until the end of the day to give its side in its dispute with Disney over transmission fees. Disney asked the Federal Communications Commission to review the case. The spat has left more than 3 million TV viewers in several cities without ABC programs. Tens of thousands of people in the Houston area are without power after storms socked the region overnight. Weather watchers say two tornadoes may have passed through. Police are talking to several suspects in the drive-by shooting death of a 17-year-old St. Paul boy. Authorities found a white Pontiac Grand Am in a South Metro suburb. Investigators say the car might be the one used in the shooting of Anthony Basta as he biked near his home last week. Authorities say they've located the driver of the car and will talk to him today. They have talked to the owner of the car but don't believe she was driving it on the night of the shooting. Massachusetts Anti-Discrimination Agency has ordered Northwest Airlines to pay more than $200,000 to a former baggage handler at Boston's Logan Airport. Deborah Mazikas claimed she was fired by the airline after cooperating in a sexual harassment investigation. Mazikas suffered a disabling back injury in 1994 when she slipped on some ice at Logan Airport. The Massachusetts Commission Against Discrimination said the airline made no effort to accommodate her post-injury physical restrictions. Northwest says it's confident the airline acted appropriately. The Minnesota Supreme Court has created a task force to study the civil counsel system. People who are the subjects of civil proceedings, like mental commitment hearings, have the right to an attorney even if they cannot afford one, and civil counsels are appointed on their behalf. The task force will consider creating an independent court-appointed attorney board to manage the civil counsel system. The group will submit its findings to the Supreme Court by the end of the year. 64 in Rochester this hour, 63 in St. Cloud, sunny and 62 in the Twin Cities. And that's the latest from Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Marianne Sullivan.
Thanks, Marianne. 25 minutes before noon, this is Midday coming to you on Minnesota Public Radio. And this hour, we've been joined by Minnesota legislative leaders Roger Moll and Steve Swigum. They've joined us from our bureau at the state capitol to bring us up to date on negotiations to try to reach a budget agreement, which would in turn open the door for negotiations and agreements on many, many other issues that we've been reporting on these last several weeks. And bring to an end the legislative session. If you've got a question for the leadership, again, let me give you the number. Don't call right now because you'll get a busy signal, but let's get to a couple of callers and then the lines will clear up a little bit. 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. Next caller is Star Tribune reporter Dennis Anderson. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, Gary. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I don't mean to turn it into a press conference, but I was driving along and listening to your wonderful show and thought I'd take this opportunity to ask the speaker and the majority leader what, if anything, will come out of the few days remaining on the natural resources front. Yesterday, Senator Lessard's bill was his effort to get his constitutional amendment bill to the Senate floor didn't work. And in the House, meanwhile, there's no apparent progress on that issue or the 6.5% lottery sales tax effort that has seen some positive movement in the Senate. So it's possible nothing could happen, and I'm wondering what the leaders think will happen.
Okay. Gentlemen?
Well, this is Roger, Dennis. I can only tell you what has passed the Senate, and it's a long way from nothing, a long way from nothing. We've passed an increase in the game and fish licenses, plus an additional $25 million, which comes from the lottery sales tax, and about approximately about $130 million in bonding projects that are all natural resource related. They deal with trails, habitat enhancement, a whole host of issues. So I can assure you that from the Senate's point of view, we are making a very serious commitment. We're putting our money where our mouth is as it relates to the natural resources and the environment. The issue as it relates to Senator Lessard's constitutional amendment, and you and I differ on this, but my problem with that is that you ought not to budget via the Constitution. And so I think you need to have more flexibility when you deal with the budget to respond to various kinds of concerns and emergencies that come up. But as it relates to making a commitment this session for natural resources and the environment, the Senate is certainly making that commitment in terms of the finances. If you measure it in terms of the finances available that we've offered, we certainly are making that commitment.
Speaker Swiggum?
Yeah, and hi, Dennis. Dennis, I think if you would go back to the articles you wrote maybe at last summer at the end of the last legislative session, and I don't have them before me. I'm just trying to go by memory. You were very concerned that the House and the Senate, that the legislature did not pass the game and fee license fee increase with the two-for-one match from the general fund. And I think that was a concern that you raised at the end of the last session. That has already been passed out of both bodies. So from that standpoint, that issue of concern that you raised last year has been addressed. The problem exists right now in that the Senate has chosen to send that bill back to us in the House tied to a few other things, such as some lighted bobbers, fish bobbers, or some lighted fishing equipment, such as the $25 million a year from the lottery proceeds to go to game and fish and parks. That latter part is all part of the global negotiations that we're talking about. And, you know, when you're in a negotiations, Dennis, that involves a whole host of issues, from appropriations to taxes to spending to health and human services to education, it doesn't make a lot of sense to, quote, cherry pick out, unquote, one provision at the expense of the entire package, at the expense of the entire global agreement. So the House is not going to allow that to take place, either the garbage type of bill that was sent back with about four or five issues in it, or the cherry picking of one appropriation over any other appropriation. In regards to the constitutional amendment, it's something I've been fighting a little bit within my caucus now the last 10 days. I kind of like the constitutional amendment because it provides it by constitution that amount of funding for parks, zoos, habitat, trails would always be there. I've found out that my Ways and Means chair, through the process, at first he was just a little bit concerned about my maybe anxiety of placing another constitutional amendment like the unicameral on the bill, I assured him that that would not take place, and now we're finding some more problems with the specifics of the dedication itself, like Senator Mowis speaking to from a policy standpoint.
William, your question, please.
Yes, I have a question regarding the bonding bill, and to both Representative Swigum and Senator Moe. And this is just a question. I'm a student at the University of Minnesota, specifically of the art department, and I have a vested interest in seeing the bonding money allocated for the university's art building. And I'm calling not only for myself but for other students who've asked me to. And just wondering when you two think that you'll come to any sort of agreement about the spending as far as the bonding bill goes, and playing good stewardship with our money, with taxpayers' money, instead of in this election year where everyone's favorite subject is tax rebates and tax cuts. Instead of doing that, playing good stewardship with our money, so that we have a clear vision and resources for future Minnesotans, in the next century.
Okay, thanks, William. Will that art bill, a building at the U, be part of a final bonding bill, gentlemen?
Well, it certainly can be. I think maybe I need a definition. Stewardship means spending, I believe, maybe in William's eyes. I want to equate the two. I think that's how William defines stewardship. William, the arts building was not in the House bill. It was in the Senate bonding bill that passed. A reason being that we stuck in the House to the governor's recommendation of $400 million for general obligation bonds, be covered by general obligation bonds or cash. That was what the governor asked us to do. It was a prudent amount of dollars to place on the credit card and use for cash in the state, and we stayed within that. Staying within that $400 million amount, we basically took a focus of twofold. One, that we were going to prioritize higher education, which we did substantially. $225 million out of our $400 million, William, goes to higher education. And two, we were going to bring prioritize projects in greater Minnesota, outstate Minnesota as well. And we also did that in the bill so that Crookston, the University of Minnesota Crookston, would receive a needed remodeling of Keele Hall, so that University of Minnesota Morris would be received the needed mathematics building, the science building out in Morris, so that the university, so that Winona State and Mankato State received, and Bemidji State received their needed buildings as well. So we tried to bring that balance of some greater Minnesota projects, stick within the $400 million, and the negotiations at this time right now, William, we've offered and suggested that we go to $500 million in the bonding bill, and I think going from four to five, William, would probably allow, without myself doing the negotiating and not being on the conference committee, would probably allow the room for the arts building at the university to be completed.
Senator Moe, do you think that the arts building is going to survive the process?
Well, if I'm not mistaken, I think it's in the Senate bill. And the Senate did place a very high priority on two areas, higher education and the environment and natural resources. So those are the areas that I think we will negotiate hardest for. But let me, since the speaker defined William's interpretation of stewardship, I guess I would think that William probably had in mind that stewardship is like being a good farmer. And that is that you don't just take the land and try to draw out of that land all you can, that you have to invest in that land. You might put in shelter belts to protect the land from blowing away. You might put in tiling systems for proper drainage or an irrigation system for the proper kinds of moisture. In other words, you invest as well. You know, one could make the case that a portion of the resources that we have today are because of deferred investments. You know, we could take all of the one-time money today and all of the ongoing money, and if I'm not mistaken, we could put it all into bridge repair and construction, and I think there would still be a waiting list. So the bottom line is that I think we have to strike a balance that, yes, we can find enough here for some permanent income and property tax cuts, but at the same time, I think it does make sense, as good stewards, to make an investment in the taxpayers' roads and bridges, in their lakes and in their parks and in their schools. That, I think, is what William was talking about when he talked about stewardship.
There was a big rally at the Capitol yesterday urging legislators to approve more money for K-12 education, and understand that the Education Conference Committee is from both the House and the Senate are talking about increased money. Question becomes, is there any sense at the Capitol as to how much is going to be enough for K-12 education? There was a large increase in the basic formula approved last year, but now school districts are saying they're still way short of money. Is there any sense among you folks as to some kind of final target where if you actually had the money and were willing to appropriate it, everybody would have enough money for education?
Well, I think we both agree that there will be some one-time money and there will be some permanent base resources. I believe that the speaker and I think we could both sign off on that. We just right now are kind of arguing over the amounts. All I know is that we've got about 80% of our school districts now that are suffering under declining enrollment, and based upon the formulas, as you know, when those formulas are based upon enrollment, they're enrollment driven, and that causes a problem for some school districts. We still have school districts that use the general fund to subsidize special education. We know of the ongoing needs for technology. There's still pressure in some growing districts for reducing class size. All of that, you know, we hear about. So we think it is important to respond to that, recognizing that last year we did put in place a two-year budget, but this is not unusual. We have, all of the years I've been here, we have come back in the second year, and we have made adjustments in terms of some of the appropriations, whether it's for education or other areas. So I think it's a legitimate area that we can invest. I think it's for the long-term good not only of the students, but I think it's in the long-term best interest of the state to have a well-trained workforce.
Speaker Swigum?
Well, Gary, we're trying to strike the balance. The balance is important between investing in education and still allowing the freedom of families, of moms and dads to you know, have some of that money themselves to make decisions in their life, as opposed to myself, the politician, or Roger Moe, the politician, make decisions with. And that's a very delicate balance to strike. Last year's education bill was a $1 billion increase. It was the most substantial increase in the state in the past decade. Now, honestly, there were some years in the 90s, there were very small or much smaller increases, and there was some makeup to do. So I understand that there are some difficulties there, but certainly there can't be fault found with last year's bill. There was a priority for education. Certainly, as we're going into this year, both House and Senate are willing to bring forward some monies for one-time and permanent spending in education. I guess the question becomes how much. Your question, Gary, was how much is necessary. You know, sometimes I smile and I think, you know, the people that come into my room, you're probably pretty well aware that, you know, when lobbyists or those come into my room, the most often used word is more. You know, we need more. And I sometimes smile and say, no matter what we give, and you're trying to ask the number as to what is appropriate, Gary, my sense is no matter what we give, it's not enough. You know, it's always going to be more. And then I hear on the radio this morning, I can't remember if it was your station or what station it was, but that, you know, in St. Paul, the school board tonight is talking about salary increases for non-teaching personnel, and that the top 30 administrators are going to, this is just St. Paul School District, are going to be averaging over $100,000 a piece. And these are people not even in the classroom. And I'm wondering, you know, the money we give, is it even going to get into the classroom? You know, those are concerns not only as a taxpayer, but as a parent with kids in the public school system in Kenyon-Wanamingo, the concerns I have that the money gets to the kids.
We are just about out of time, unfortunately, but let's get at least one more caller on here. Quick question, Kevin?
Yeah, here's my question. I find the discussion regarding bonding projects very curious because we do have a surplus now. I know that the legislature appears to have the position that borrowing for certain projects, building projects and things, is very appropriate because it's long-term planning. But the reality is that when a family borrows, like for a mortgage on a house, for example, when times get good, you try, if you can, to pay off your mortgage early, pay off your debt early. So here's what it comes down to, and I kind of like to get your reaction to this, and that is that what it appears is occurring with the bonding projects is that the state is borrowing money in order to fund the tax rebate. Because if they didn't borrow the money, they couldn't fund the tax rebate, and they wouldn't need the they could use the tax rebate to pay off the bonds is the point. Why pay interest on a tax rebate?
Is Kevin's analysis correct?
Well, I think in the ideal world it probably is. Unfortunately, most of us families, mine included, never live in the ideal world because I've never been able to prepay my mortgage or my my car or anything early. I've not been able to do that, and my guess is most families haven't been able to do that. They aren't able to go out and pay cash for their house. In the same respect, maybe if we were able to reduce that tax burden upon moms and dads a little bit, maybe they could do that, Kevin. Maybe they could prepay their mortgage on their home. Like when you buy your home, and my wife and I just bought ours 2 years ago. We had rented for 18 years, and we took out this 30-year mortgage, and we pay it off over the length that we expect to be there. In the same respect, when you build a building at the University of Minnesota, when you build a building at Winona State, when you build a building at St. Cloud or Bemidji State, you probably think of paying it off over the life of the building, and that it shouldn't just be the obligation of taxpayers nowadays to pay for it, but taxpayers over the 30 years that the building is going to be used. It seems to have some rationale, just in the same way as the mortgage on your home.
Senator Moe?
Well, I can see where Kevin came to the conclusion. I think the governor, in his initial budget, offered bonding bill or borrowing bill of about $460 million thereabouts, and he wants a rebate of about $470 million. So I can see where Kevin kind of came to that conclusion, where if you borrow money, it's borrowing money for the rebate. The Senate, the way the Senate approached our public investments, is that yes, we propose to borrow money for certain projects, but we also use some of the one-time cash to pay for those up front. And the logic behind it is that, for instance, particularly within our post-secondary education system, all of our college campuses and universities, there's a lot of fixing up that has to be done, fixing up the roofs, the windows, the parking lots. We think that it makes more sense to pay cash for those kinds of projects than to borrow for 30 years. The same with some of the wastewater treatment programs for some of the cities. We think it makes sense to pay cash versus borrowing money. And I realize it's a difference of opinion that we have, but if you pay cash for capital investments that you know you're going to make anyway, I think in the long run you basically you save the state taxpayers about the cost of the project in interest payments.
Well, we are unfortunately out of time. I'm just wondering, should we pencil in another program for next week on a budget negotiation update, or will this be resolved by next week?
More likely than that, we will be here to be part of the program next week. Let's pencil it in.
This is getting to be such a wonderful habit. We're looking forward to this every week now, Gary.
Maybe, Gary, though, you want to invite a couple of our colleagues that are more entertaining and more knowledgeable than Mo and Swigum.
Oh, you do a great job. Thanks so much, gentlemen. Appreciate
Thank you
taking the time. House Speaker Steve Swigum and DFL Senate Majority Leader Roger Mo joining us during this first hour of Midday, bringing us up to date on the status of those budget negotiations at the Capitol.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 2nd of May, 2000. It's the birthday of the portrait and fashion photographer Philippe Halsman, born in Riga, Latvia, 1906. He photographed for Vogue and Life magazines. It's the birthday of Bing Crosby in Tacoma, Washington, 1904. His song White Christmas, 1942, was the biggest selling single record ever. It's the birthday of baby Dr. Benjamin Spock in New Haven, Connecticut in 1903. It's the birthday of journalist W.J. Cash, born in Gaffney, South Carolina in 1900, best known for a single book which came out in 1941, The Mind of the South. In December, he was married. The book came out in February. Its critical acclaim won him a Guggenheim Fellowship, on which he went to Mexico to begin writing a novel. But once there, he became severely ill, mentally and physically, and in July, he hanged himself in a hotel room in Mexico City. It's the birthday of lyricist Lawrence Hart in New York City, 1895. At the age of 23, he met composer Richard Rodgers. They became partners, and in the course of 25 years, they wrote at least 1,000 songs together, including Lady's a Tramp, My Funny Valentine, Bewitched, Bothered, and Bewildered. Lawrence Hart drank himself to death. He was 48 years old when he died. He was a gay man in a world that had not begun to accept them. It's the birthday of Henry Martin Robert, born in Robertville, South Carolina, 1837. Famous to us as the author of Robert's Rules of Order. He chaired a meeting at his church in 1862 in New Bedford, Massachusetts. The meeting got out of hand. He couldn't find a set of parliamentary rules to keep the next meeting in order, and so he wrote his own code. It took him over 12 years to complete, but it still is the final word in settling procedural squabbles. It was on this day in 1611 the King James Version of the Bible was published in England, after the king had appointed a committee of scholars to produce an English translation of the Bible. The King James, known still to many in Britain as the Authorized Version, and which many older people still miss and feel was more elegant and poetic. For example, the line from the 23rd Psalm in the King James Version, "Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me." And in the New Jerusalem Bible of 1990, "Even were I to walk in a ravine as dark as death, I should fear no danger, for you are at my side. Your staff and your crook are there to soothe me." Here are two poems for today by Emily Dickinson, two little eight-line love poems. "I hide myself within my flower, that wearing on your breast, you, unsuspecting, wear me too, and angels know the rest. I hide myself within my flower, that fading from your vase, you, unsuspecting, feel for me almost a loneliness. Come slowly, Eden, lips unused to thee, bashful, sip thy jasmines, as the fainting bee, reaching late his flower, round her chamber hums, counts his nectars, enters, and is lost in balms." Two little love poems by Emily Dickinson. That's the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, May the 2nd, made possible by 21NorthMaine.com, where book lovers find more than 10 million used, rare, and antiquarian books. On the web at 21NorthMaine.com. Technical direction by Leszek Wojcik and Scott Rivard. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Regional broadcasts of the Writer's Almanac are supported by Marquette Banks, your community bank, offering a broad range of financial services for your business and personal needs.
News headlines are next, and then we head off to the National Press Club. Our speaker today, Iowa Governor Tom Vilsack, talking about genetically modified organisms.
Some of the strongest voices in your community, business, and government are those of NPR listeners. Want to be heard? Get your message out to the community by becoming an NPR program sponsor. Call Sherry Davis at 651-290-1496.
You're listening to Minnesota Public Radio. We have a sunny sky, 62 degrees at KNWFM, 91.1 Minneapolis and St. Paul.